Hello everyone, welcome to Women Folk, a brand new podcast with me, Maria Wallace. I've been a grassroots music promoter under the name True North Music for the last 10 years, putting on gigs and booking tours for some of the finest artists in folk roots, bluegrass and Americana. This brand new podcast is all about telling the stories of women working in roots music, on stage and behind the scenes.
My dad thought I was nuts. He was like, you're going all the way to Mozambique to play music with this man you've only ever met on the internet. What do you do?
Today's guest on Women Folk is English musician, singer and composer Kate Griffin. Best known for her innovative clawhammer banjo playing and her work with the band Mishra, Kate's also a talented photographer and visual artist. She always seems to have a number of interesting projects on the go, so let's get straight into my conversation with Kate Griffin. Hello, Kate.
Hello.
Welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me. How exciting.
I know you studied at the University of Sheffield. Was that studying music?
Yes. I actually went to Bath Spa first for a little bit to do a joint music and graphic degree as a pianist and as a graphic designer, and realised that was no-no. Then I went to Sheffield and asked if I could do performance as a banjo player, and they were like, I suppose so, go for it. So yeah, I started having lessons with Dan Walsh at university.
He's quite a well-known English clawhammer banjo player, for those who don't know. Was that where you also, I believe that at university, is that where you started to develop an interest in Indian classical music? That's another integral part of your sound, I think.
Yeah, so there's an amazing guy, John Ball, at the university who I now play with, who was running a sort of very open session for Indian classical music where you'd go and you could play it on your instrument. So I started going to that at university and really enjoyed the sort of structure of like rags and the scales, and that I just found that really fascinating. And we really liked playing with John, and when I finished and did my final recital, he played with me and then joined our band after that.
The main band you perform with is Mishra, alongside your musical partner, Ford Collier. And actually, I think you describe it, or you used to, on your website as a global folk collective. Mm. And you seem to have various iterations of the band, from duo right up to 5 or 6-piece band.
Yeah.
Tell us a bit about Mishra and how that sort of developed over the years.
Yeah, so it started as me and Ford Collier, who I met through Sheffield University and in that Indian music ensemble session, but also the folk session that was happening. And we started playing together, and it was nice to play with somebody who had these different influences of folk, but also mm-hmm. interested in like more worldly stuff. But we did start playing a lot of sort of bluegrass and Americana together. We thought it was just so fun to do that. And then we started playing with Joss Manhazel, who's a double bassist. And for a long time, we were like, oh, we're going to be like a sort of bluegrass covers band that gets to do weddings and make loads of money doing that.
So that was your early style?
Yeah, we just had a lot of fun, but I think then, because we all three of us had a big interest in it, and other music like Indian classical and just lots of Irish music and all these different influences. So then we started writing together, or me and Ford started writing together and taking our music to Joss, and we thought, hey, this sounds quite cool. And then we started playing with John Ball, who I just mentioned.
Mm-hmm. The tabla player,
yeah. So that would have been maybe when we did our first album in 2019, there was four of us, but myself and Ford were still performing as a mm-hmm. duo sometimes. And then our next album in 2021, we had our friend Alex Lyon, who plays clarinet and bass clarinet and sings beautiful harmonies. She came and played on that album, Reclaim, in 2021. So then we were like five of us, but again, we were still performing as a duo. Me and Ford do lots of educational work as a duo as well. Mm-hmm. And then most recently, we've started working with Deepa Shakti, who's an Indian classical and Sufi vocalist. So now we can perform up to six of us.
Wow.
And we did a big tour in spring 2023, big funded tour for that new project, which is definitely more of a collaboration, as mm-hmm. like Mishra is one entity and Deeper is the other, and we're working together. So it's nice to be sort of a collective and a bit more free, because it gives us the like flexibility to do different size shows and have the different sound, and it keeps it fresh. You know, we turn up to a gig and we're like, oh, we haven't played like this lineup before. And it keeps it really fun. You know, like you're playing the same repertoire, but it's always slightly different. So it's quite nice.
The sun has set upon us. Inside in my car. People make a promise. Mm-hmm. Up even higher, born amongst the fires, brothers of mine, rise, sisters of mine, shine.
I know you grew up in the southwest of England. Tell us a bit about how you came to playing music, and how did you get into folk music as a young person?
Okay, so my dad is a musician, not by trade, but he's always played music, and he plays country music. But he would sit me down as a tiny little child on his lap and make me watch loads of country music on the telly. Which I think I resisted as a small child. But then I did start playing in bands when I was about, probably about 14, 15. I was in a all-girls cover band, and we'd go out and do gigs as teenagers.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and we would play for like parties and in pubs, and we'd just do noughties covers, which was a lot of fun. I was on keys. And then I started getting more seriously into music, and I picked up the banjo then when I must have been about 17, I suppose. And I started going to like a local session, but mm-hmm. it was quite an odd session. It was kind of an anything goes sessions in terms of repertoire, mostly Irish, but also a bit of English and a bit of American. But it was odd in the sense that they had a folder. Normally these sessions, you know, would just people come and you do everything by ear, but they had a folder of tunes with everything written out in standard notation.
Oh.
Yeah. So I was taking my banjo along, and I was a piano player first, but I was like, I love the sound of this clawhammer banjo thing. So I was learning clawhammer banjo through sight reading sort of notation of tunes.
That's quite an unusual route.
Yeah. So that's how I started playing the banjo.
I know you play several other instruments as well. You mentioned piano and keys originally, and I know you also play accordion and dobro, but that you're best known as a clawhammer banjo player, I think.
Yeah, I think so.
You seem to have fun pushing the boundaries of the instrument compared to a lot of what is going on, say, in the UK and the US in terms of clawhammer banjo players. How do you feel about the instrument, and what do you love about it? And do you have a particular kind of conscious desire to push the boundaries of that instrument?
Yeah, I think I have a very complicated relationship with the banjo. sometimes I love it, and sometimes, not that I hate it, but I get frustrated with it. I think when I started playing, I really liked old-timey, that old-timey sound. And then I just kind of probably got a bit nerdy, and I was like, ooh, what else can I do with this? Like, it was just like more of a, just like a really fun thing to explore. And then I kind of realized, like, I don't think I'm going to play old-time music on the banjo as well as that people who grew up with this sound and live and breathe it ever are, because I'm in Sheffield in Yorkshire. And there is a wonderful scene here, but it's not like that wasn't how what I was raised mm-hmm. on. It was so much other music. And so it felt more kind of right to just play the music that I like and makes me feel things on this instrument that I really love the sound mm-hmm. of. So I don't know. Part of it, at one point, I was definitely conscious of like, oh, I am curious to see what can this instrument and this style of playing in particular do, like what are its maybe limitations. But then I think that's morphed more into like, actually I just want to play the music I really like to make and feels very me on this instrument that now I feel really comfortable playing.
Does that feed into your development as a composer and songwriter as well, in that, you know, presumably in the early days you're doing more covers or standard repertoire, if you like, old time tunes and do you find that, you know, as you've developed as in writing your own material, that then allows you to explore in a more original way?
Yeah, definitely, because I think when you're composing things, it's drawing from such a big well of what you've been sort of consuming. And like from playing, like I learned lots of tunes and lots of traditional repertoire, like that was made for the banjo, and that's where like your muscle mm-hmm. memory comes from, doesn't it, playing yeah. that sort of stuff. So that's a big part of that well when I'm composing. But like I am aware, I'm like, this isn't going to sound like, you know, necessarily traditional old time or whatever, because that's not it. There's so much other parts of my musical mm-hmm. Experience that's being fed into it.
Something else I wanted to ask about, your collaboration with Machume Zango, how did that come about?
That was from Making Tracks, which is a really cool organization which brings together musicians from around the world. Normally they do a really lovely residency, but I did it in 2020, which was obviously lockdown year.
Oh dear.
Yeah, so there was lots of, it was all online, which was obviously very difficult, but also had its perks, because it kind of meant they were able to have musicians from further away, because there's a really big like environmental side to making tracks and what they do. Mm-hmm. And so like travel and everything, they're very conscious around. But so having an online version meant that there were two musicians, like Machume was from Mozambique, there was someone from Zimbabwe, I think. Can't remember now. And there was someone from America, somewhere in America. And I can't even remember where everyone was from, but it was so amazing to have all these musicians from around the world.
So did they match you with the partner? They didn't throw you all together and see what came out? You were matched with a particular musical partner and then told to get on with it? Or
well, we had this fun thing called like, it was like speed dating, where we'd like go into a little breakout room on Zoom and we'd play a little bit or do whatever we could do over Zoom with like each person, like your sort of speed dating. And then afterwards we'd sort of say what we really liked about working with different people and then sort of go off and work out who we want to be with. And so me and Machume just thought, hey, this is great.
Great. So there was that creative spark there.
Yeah, even over Zoom. But yeah, so we did that for a week and we made some music together online. And then we thought that's brilliant. Like we've got to do more of this. So I decided to do a Develop Your Creative Practice funding bid from the Arts Council to go out to Mozambique and work with Machume, which got postponed another year because of COVID was still happening. So I went in 2022 and we recorded an album together. So Ford Collier from Mishra also came, because he's my partner alongside my music partner. And I thought, hey, this is going to be great. So Ford also came with me and we recorded an album out there.
And Ford's a great percussionist, right? As well as a multi-instrumentalist on lots of other.
Yeah, and I knew he would just not, wouldn't want to miss out on that opportunity. So he came along and it was really great fun. And yeah, we recorded this album called Chopo. And Machume plays the timbila, which is like a huge, big sort of like balafon. So it's like a, you hit it and it's got these resonant gourds underneath. And it's a, such an amazing sound. And it's so rhythmic. And I think that's what really drew me to it, because like clawhammer banjo is obviously so rhythmic. Mm-hmm. And it was such a good sound and so much fun to play together.
The experience of going to Mozambique must have been, I mean, that's been quite different.
Yeah.
Or was that, you know, was it really just amazingly?
Well, I think my dad thought I was nuts. He was like, you're going all the way to Mozambique to play music with this man you've only ever met on the internet. What do you do? But like, I think Machume is such a great guy and we had such a great sense of working together that I just didn't even really like question. Like I didn't really even think like what are we doing, where are we going, I didn't really question any of it, because I was like, we're just gonna go and make some great music. And we, Machume's got a studio in his house that we just stayed there for 3 weeks and we did a gig out there.
Wow.
And so we worked with some local musicians to be in the band, and we put this gig on in Maputo, which was a lot of fun. The audience were just really up for it, which was great.
People dancing, and was it that kind of gig?
Yeah, but and really good dancing. Like, no offense to the folk festival audiences here in the UK, but it was some really good dancing.
That sounds like an amazing, very positive experience.
Yeah, it was so brilliant. Yeah.
And that collaboration has continued on over the last year as well, hasn't it? Didn't Machume play a few things here?
Yes. So he came last year and is coming again the same time this year in July, because we're doing Pretty Folk Festival together and Swanage Folk Festival later in September, and Purbeck Folk Festival as well in August. So we've started filling up with more UK dates this time, which is quite fun because Machume is such an international man. You know, he's played all over the world, but he'd never played in the UK before.
And I've given you twice, taken more than you need to survive. My own wishes have found deep differences with man's desire. Bumped me over, my only gift is nothing left to fuel your fire.
A few minutes ago you mentioned like school workshops, and you do quite a lot of that. I booked you and Ford Collier to deliver a day of primary school workshops here in Marsden in Huddersfield a couple of months ago, and that was a big hit with the children. I remember I've noted down some of the quotes we got, which were very sweet. I loved the whole day. The folk music made me feel happy and excited. I love the drums and the banjo and the sound of them together. I don't know how many people would
we should put that on our press release.
So how did you get into teaching school workshops and that those kind of child-centred events? Is that something you proactively seek out, or it's just sort of, how has that developed?
Oh, I can't really remember. Oh, I remember. So we started doing work through Live Music Now, which is an amazing organisation that sort of provides work for young musicians, but then also provides really high quality music in places that might not have it otherwise. So it's a really, really great thing. And we started that together and we were doing some training. They offer really good training as well for working in like special needs mm-hmm. schools or like care homes or specifically people with like dementia. And so we started sort of training and working for them quite a few years ago.
That sounds like really important stuff to get music out into the community.
Exactly. And the training that it gives us is brilliant because we can take that into other places. Like we work for individually and together, we work with Concertinis, which is a Sheffield-based charity.
Yes.
It started because Polly, who set it up when she had children, like she's a musician and she loves going to gigs. When she had children, she could no longer go to evening gigs. So she set it up to do gigs for parents and babies for like early years. So we do quite a lot of that. And then just various sort of like fun, I don't know, it's just, I just love it.
I saw something about you do some stuff with the Forest School.
Yeah, that's another Sheffield organisation called Little Puddle People. And they're really fun sessions. We just go to the woods and normally there's like maybe a bit of a story and then some songs and some like playing in the mud, making like, we did like pumpkin shakers, you know, all the fun stuff, bringing music into just everywhere.
Yeah, that sounds like very satisfying. One of the recurring things I've noticed in your music and in your videos is I think it seems to have a love of the outdoors and nature.
Mm.
Are those things important to you? Is that a good contrast from the touring life?
Definitely, yeah. I think I'm someone who very much needs that. I really need those open spaces. And, you know, we have the Peak District right next to us and I really need that space to sort of decompress and be inspired. And I realized quite recently how I can be inspired. I used to like worry, I was like, oh, I really love going outdoors in nature and it's something that really sort of inspires me. But when I'm out walking, sometimes I can't connect the two, like my creativity and my walking. And I sort of realized recently that it's mostly because I'm doing those things with people I love often. But like, I think I've realized that I need to just be outside in like hills to sort of bring that creativity into it, which has been quite fun to explore lately.
Mm-hmm. I know you did a sort of recreation of the Kinder Scout Mass Trespass.
Yes. Yeah. What, that would have been 3 years ago?
Is it
now?
Really?
Three years ago. Maybe 2 years ago. Yeah. Oh, and we went up onto sort of like Grinslow around there and filmed it with quite a few of us. Maybe there was about six of us playing on the hill, singing Yuma Cole's song. That was great fun.
For anyone who doesn't know, the Mass Trespass, which was 90-something years ago, was an event where working people went up on the hill to challenge the fact that there was no public access. So it was a very fundamental event in the right to go walking in beautiful places. I know from experience myself that as a booking agent that touring can be really stressful for musicians, and especially these days when we seem to be in tough times for live music. Do you have any tips for how to deal with the ups and downs of touring, or how does that fit into your life? As you know, the conversation already so far, there's so many different parts of what you do. You seem to have a good balance of different types of creativity going on.
Yeah. I think we had a tour recently in autumn last year with the quartet, Mishra Quartet, and we had such a lovely time, and I think that's because we've had less lovely times in the past where it's been really stressful, and we've realized how do we make this easy for ourselves, and what do we enjoy about it? And like, we enjoy doing nice gigs where we don't, they're smaller gigs where we don't have to stress about like selling loads of tickets, and we don't like doing really long drives after a gig. We like to go to bed on time, and we like to not have to rush around to do other stuff surrounding tour dates. So like this time we didn't have that many dates. I can't remember how many it was, but we just had like a lovely couple of dates where we knew these lovely venues we were going to, and I booked no other work sort of surrounding that. And I also discovered Lions.
Yes. Well, the classic musician timeline, surely, the musician's day.
Yeah, I know. I don't know what I was doing getting up early and trying to do work before, but this time round, I learned that you can stay in bed after a gig because you've been working till midnight. And we had a really, really nice time. But yeah, it can be a bit much, that's for sure. If you go too intense and too hard, it can be the most draining thing. But lessons learned.
This podcast, I've decided it's all about telling the stories of women in roots music.
Mm.
Part of the reason I decided to do this podcast with women is that I like music podcasts, and I noticed that the vast majority of interviews are all with men, which of course does reflect the representation across the board, I think, in the music industry in all genres, which of course has a lot of historic and ongoing reasons.
Yeah.
And you work in collaboration with your male partner a lot of the time, and then you have a band that has both men and women in it.
Yeah.
Did you kind of, how's your experience been of navigating the world of touring and of music making as a young woman?
And I did play with the Magpies for a while, which is an all-female band, and that was quite a different experience, actually, being in an all-female band. Like, everyone I worked with is, in any project, has always been absolutely lovely, male or female, but there is a sense when you're working with just women in a band, a sense of like, we get this. We all get what each of us have to go through. You know, like now if I turn up to a gig sometimes, and well, lots of the times, there's always a sense of like, you're the only woman in this band that's turned up. You're probably the singer. Annoyingly, I am. So I do fit that stereotype.
But that's not all you do. You do a lot more.
Exactly. But and it's like also as soon as the sound engineer comes into the room and they walk up to one of the guys in the band and says, oh, so what do you need? Like, what's your tech spec? And I think they'd all admit that I've actually probably got the most sort of tech knowledge amongst us in the room.
So you still very much see that in 2025?
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. And I, you know, this is a horrible story, but I was at a folk festival last summer and we were queuing at the, I won't say which one, but we were queuing to get our wristbands and at the reception, and there was other artists turning up to get their wristbands, and there was an older male artist who just walked behind me and just grabbed my bum.
No.
And it's just, yeah, so this just happens. It just happens. And like, I just sort of looked at my bandmate, so like, did that really just happen? And it does. It's really frustrating.
Did you clout him?
I was too shocked. I was just too shocked.
That's an extreme example. I wasn't expecting that.
It is extreme. Well,
yeah, it is and it isn't. I know from unhappy experience that often when I mention these things in public forums, there's really a defensiveness. There seems often this unwillingness to countenance that women are treated any differently. But, well, you've just straight off the bat there, there's a couple of times. So, yeah.
Exactly. It was interesting. I literally have just come before this, before talking to you. I just came from a meeting, actually, to talk with an organiser of a gig this was the first time she'd ever put on a concert. And it was like a really cool event, bringing together lots of different artists from who did like spoken word, but it was all about the outdoors. But there was like a incident at the gig where the compere made me feel quite uncomfortable on stage by we said we were going to have a bit of an interview or whatever, and he said something like, oh, well, tell me about your outfit or something was the first question. And it's kind of like a little bit, yeah.
It's just people think that's harmless, but they just wouldn't do that to a man unless they were wearing some outlandish.
Yeah.
It just would not happen in the same way, would it? And must knock you off your stride somewhat.
I was really nervous already, actually, because I don't do that much solo performing. So it did make me feel uncomfortable. But I actually just, so I came from this conversation where we were talking about it in a really positive, like, oh, okay, so actually what do we need to do to make these spaces more comfortable for you?
In your conversation with the promoter afterwards?
Yeah, so we had this, and like, yeah, I say she doesn't put on gigs. This is the first one she's done, and I think it was a big learning curve. But what made me feel okay was I was like, oh, so we can actually have that conversation about why did this happen? Why did I feel uncomfortable? And like, what would, you know, how would we mitigate that in the future?
Yeah.
And I think in some organizations that, or some maybe like folk clubs or festivals or some places where they've been going for a really long time, I think feedback is quite hard sometimes to give.
Yes, and I think in these small communities where everyone knows each other, there is a reluctance to criticize. I think it's important that these things are raised and that improvements are made and, you know, things are made fairer for everyone.
Yeah. And I do think talking about it, because it was interesting how when I was talking to this person who put on a gig, it was a really interesting example because she's never been in the folk scene at all. She had no idea about the folk scene. And she was like, well, does this sort of thing happen often? And I was like, yeah, sadly. Like, sadly, it does happen often.
You're a talented photographer too, and videographer, and an illustrator. How do those skills fit in with your, well, they're complementary to your music career, but like, how do you kind of fit those around your performance and writing and recording, your more core music activities? Is it quite good to be able to switch to different kinds of artistic expression?
Definitely. I go a bit crazy if I just do one or the other. Like if I'm just doing music, I go a bit nuts, and vice versa. I really need to have some like visual work going on at the same time. I don't know why. I really do. And I really like combining them. Like most of my work is for musicians or for my own music.
So that's great because you'll have all the contacts.
Well, yeah, it's just really lovely to feel like when musicians say like, oh, I need this video or I need this artwork, I'm like, I kind of get that sort of frustration sometimes of not knowing how do you sort of visually show your music. I get that frustration myself as a musician. So it's really nice to have those conversations with musicians and be like, oh, well, how about we try this? Or have you thought of this? And try and work out what seems right for their music. I just really love that. It feels like my two worlds come together.
So what's coming up for you and Mishra over the next few months? What do you have to look forward to in 2025, and where can people see you?
Okay, so this year is going to be a big year for Mishra because we're releasing our album with Deepa. So this collaboration album is going to be out in October this year.
Wow.
Yeah. So we're doing like a big tour in autumn, and we've got some festivals with Mishra, with the big band. We've got some little duo gigs, which is going to be lovely, some folk clubs.
And some festivals with Machume, of course.
And then we've got festivals with Machume, which is going to be really, really fun. He's going to bring his sunshine over, whether we have it here in the UK or not, but he'll bring it over. And it's an exciting year because I've started working on some solo music, which is really fun.
Oh, all right. Entirely solo.
Yeah.
Wow.
I know. I've always been really reluctant in the past to do that, but now is the time. So I've been doing a couple of solo gigs, and I was a long way away, but hopefully in December we'll be doing a couple more solo shows, little tour. Maybe. But yeah, it's a scary, scary prospect.
I mean, again, that's useful to be able to do that, isn't it? I mean, financially and logistically as a musician. So again, it's kind of, you can go all the way from one to six people, and yeah, depending on what the gig is that's on offer. So,
yeah.
Or, you know, fitting into collaborative events.
Yeah, I think I don't know if I like it yet, playing on my own. I've only done a couple of gigs, and there is something that I miss about, you know, you turn up to a venue with your band or bandmate, and there's someone there to share it with. There's someone to the good and the bad, you know.
So you mentioned the new album. Has that already been recorded, or is that something that's actually happening this year?
Yeah, so we recorded it last year. It's all been tracked. We like converted a room in our house to be sort of a small studio, and we've taken months and months and months laboring over these tracks with all six of us sort of coming into this room and recording it. And the wonderful Stuart McCullum of The Breath. I don't know if you've come across Stuart.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. So he's producing it, or helping myself and Ford produce it, which has been, yeah, it's an exciting stage where everything's tracked and we're ready to like make it really fun and exciting. But yeah, it's quite a groovy album.
So people should look out for that in October, did you say? Or
October, yeah. It's going to be called Turn O Spinning Wheel.
Marvellous. Yeah. And so where can people find out more about you and Mishra? And I'll put these in the show notes.
Oh, lovely. Yeah, so Mishra is probably most active on Instagram, Mishra.music. And our website is www.mishramusic.co.uk. But we mostly love mailing lists. We love an old-fashioned chat through an email. So you can sign up to our mailing list.
I think that's more important than ever, isn't it, really?
Yeah, exactly. And I also probably use Instagram as my main sort of output of all of the things that I'm doing. So the Machume stuff goes through that as well. And that's called maybe Kate.Griffin, I'm going to say.
Brilliant. Well, thanks so much for talking to me, Kate.
Oh, pleasure. I'm really excited for the podcast. It's going to be great.
That's very kind of you. And yes, I look forward to seeing you perhaps in a solo gig. I'm sure I'll see you with Mishra this year.
Oh, hopefully.
Thank you very much for talking with me today.
Thanks.
Women Folk was produced and presented by me, Maria Wallace. Check out the show notes to find out more about Kate Griffin and Mishra. Since we recorded this interview, Kate and Ford have set up a new Instagram page, @GriffinandCollier, for the Mishra Duo project. You can subscribe, download, and listen to episodes of Women Folk wherever you get your podcasts. Or visit my website, truenorthmusic.co.uk, for more information and links. Follow us on social media @womenfolkpod on Instagram and at facebook.com/womenfolkpod. Thanks for listening.